I'm going to back into this morning's Easter message by telling you a true story about myself. Years ago, when I was new to the ministry, my friend Nick and I used to get together once a month to critique each other's sermons, hopefully to pick up some pointers from the other. We would take a whole afternoon for this, meeting in a coffee shop in Strathroy, about halfway between Sarnia and St. Thomas, where we lived. This was in the days, of course, before email, if you can believe it. And so when we arrived, we first had to sit down in a corner of the restaurant and read each other's sermons. We'd sound them out slowly at our tables, whispering the words to kind of catch the flow of it. And then as we read them, we'd mark each other's sermons up. And finally, we'd sit down and compare notes and critique each other's sermons. I think this was good practice for both of us. We always managed to find something nice to say about the other's sermon. But we were good enough friends to be honest, too. Anyways, after doing this for a number of months, Nick told me about a pattern that he saw in my preaching that troubled him. Nick said that my sermons were too focused on what everyone in church had to do to be good Christians. My sermons were too focused on, you have to do this, you have to do this, you have to do this and that and that and this. I objected. I said, you know, come on, Nick. We're good Reformed, that means Presbyterian, Calvinist, we're good Reformed pastors. And so this kind of preaching is expected. In our faith tradition, the Calvinist tradition, which is shared by the United Church of Canada, in our Calvinist tradition, we believe in changing, transforming the world. We believe that all our parishioners, whatever their occupation, have to do their work just right to bring about justice and shalom and love in the world. But you know, it's difficult for people to do this and their energy flags. And so as a preacher, I have to offer weekly sermonic reminders and exhortations and rules to encourage my congregation, you know, to keep doing the right thing. In those days, in that denomination, my old denomination, that meant that the people who came to church each Sunday had to be reminded to support your local parochial Christian school. Vote. Campaign. Don't have sex till you're married. Consider the poor when you do your purchasing or your hiring. Live and love one another above all things. You know, don't cheat, read good spiritual books, study, attend church twice a week and five times during the Christmas New Year season. You have to do this, or else. I suppose that being 30 at the time, and in my first charge, I was quite impressed with myself and especially with my spiritual and moral authority. It had been handed to me, after all, at my ordination. So why shouldn't this congregation do what I tell them to do? That's what they hired me for. But you know, by now, looking back at those old sermons, I see that Nick was exactly right. As a young pastor, I was far too eager to lay down the rules and the regulations, the habits and the commands, the piety and the requirements that would make you a good Christian. There was a lot of finger waving in my preaching, but not much good news, not much consolation. Now you might think that this sort of preachy, demanding Christianity that Nick objected to in my preaching is something that only conservative evangelical churches are into. But actually it isn't. This sort of preachy, demanding Christianity can be a real problem even for churches that are unlimited, unorthodox, and united. That is, our church, our united churches. You see, in the liberal tradition of Christianity, the focus has long been away from orthodoxy and exactly what you have to believe to be good or do to be good in your personal moral life. But the focus has been on doing social justice, on following Jesus with your whole life and changing the world, which sounds awfully familiar to me. Now, in general, social justice is a great thing. It's better than great, in fact. But if I limited my preaching here in this liberal church to social justice, to insisting that we must imitate Jesus, that we must always love our neighbors, that we must change the world, that we must do justice in the Middle East, that we must do what it takes to make justice and peace embrace everywhere all the time. If I limited my preaching to what we as liberals are known for, social justice, then I would be doing the exact same thing here that I was doing in my first congregation. I would always be waving my finger at you, I would be cajoling you, I would be pushing you, and I would be making you feel mad and insecure about your faith and how good you are. Finally, that focus on what you have to do Sunday after Sunday, if you heard it from this pulpit, it would eventually make church seem like a really big downer. To use a word that was cool when I was 30. I mean, you'd feel constantly scolded here in church because you weren't living up to that social justice ideal. And that isn't much fun. Which brings me finally to Easter. Easter is God's cure for preachers who are big nags. Easter is about the great consolation of the gospel, the gift of life. Now, don't get me wrong. I know that God is a mystery beyond us that we're never going to quite pin down, and I know that it is impossible to understand with our finite minds what really happened before the film camera on Easter morning. But for me to get loud or angry and pound my fist on the pulpit to insist on a particular interpretation of the resurrection mystery or to dwell on how little we know about Easter doesn't really illuminate the good news of Easter either. And whatever else we believe Easter is, it is good news. And in the stories of the resurrection, we learn that in spite of the injustice and trouble in the world that led to the death of a good man like Jesus, God's ultimate design in this is to give life to all as a gift, that life wins in the Christian vision. I mean, just think of what happened around Jesus at the time of Easter and shortly after. For example, Jesus' disciple Peter, do you remember him? The one who denied knowing Jesus three times? He was forgiven and allowed to turn over a new page in his life. God's design for the world was that the women would find this tomb empty, but that they would go out dancing. God's design for the world is that the church, as a place where we are kind to each other, where we love each other, God's design is that this church would outlast Rome and its violent system of justice, so-called. God's design for the world is that foreigners, you know about that, foreigners and women and slaves would be recognized as fully human, fully alive. God's design for the world is that it not only be a place where shalom is possible sometimes because we're working hard at it, but that shalom sometimes just runs rampant in spite of our failures, and we scratch our heads and ask, How could this be? This has been a tough week in this world. The citizens of Brussels, and lest we forget, also the citizens of Homs and Ankara and Yemen and Baghdad, this week they have experienced terror that we can hardly imagine. And many of us have come to church this morning wearing, you know, masks because we're struggling with private illnesses, with impending death, with financial ruin, with broken relationships with siblings or parents. Another report on climate change came in this week that said that it's all happening way faster than we had believed, and soon even large parts of Florida will be covered by water. We have debts we cannot pay. We have bosses that we cannot please. We have bodies that promise us nothing but trouble in the future. Now, I could get on the pulpit, I guess, and insist that you all have to go out there and fix this fast. I could say that it's your responsibility and that you have to. I could wag my finger and make you feel guilty about not doing enough or inept for not doing it well enough. But it's Easter, so none of that. Instead, I offer you the consolation of the gospel. Following the rumors of Jesus' resurrection, the good news is that, you know, new life is possible. Not only is it possible, but new life will break out where we least expect it, and new life is going to get the last word too, no matter what you do or are able to do. And the good news of the gospel that I did not understand as a young preacher is just this: life is a divine gift. It is to be lived in gratitude. And that means there is nothing you have to do. There is nothing you have to do. There's nothing you have to do. Life is a divine gift. Enjoy it. It's the God thing to do at Easter. Amen.